Yeah, there you go. We did it this time.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Real Estate Makes Us Drink. Brian Quinlan here from Daniels Real Estate.
Brad Nickum from Nest Mortgage Group.
All right. Well, we have, to your pleasure, another guest.
We do.
Sir, please introduce yourself to our audience.
My name is J.C. Walkerman with Catalyst Insurance Group.
Wow. People love talking about insurance.
They love insurance.
So much.
That's okay.
Especially right now.
You may notice that my glass is only half full because this, unfortunately, is our second iteration of this.
Take two.
As the recording was not started by someone in behind the bar. So
push the button.
Cheers to you.
I think they call
cheers
that off-camera. We talked a lot off-camera.
Yeah. We prepared. It was preparedment.
Is that a word?
It's not, but
it's today.
That is a very clear bottle of tequila.
It is.
Drink of water.
This is Eric's company, M77, veteran-owned, currently a active duty military, United States military
U.S. military,
guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Bottle number 756. This is like really small batch tequila. It's phenomenal. Made it NOM 1477 in a special little distillery that they built in the back here, and the master distiller and Eric came up with this profile, and it's phenomenal.
All right.
Great tequila.
You mention NOMs all the time. A, I'm impressed how you remember that, though I know it's on the bottle.
Yes.
But number two, how many NOMs are there?
That's a great question. I have no idea.
Oh.
A lot.
It says 1477, does that mean 1,477?
No. They're all four-digit NOMs.
Okay.
I think there's somewhere around 300 different distilleries, and each distillery has its own NOM number.
Okay.
And the NOM isn't necessarily the distillery that the tequila was made at. The NOM is the distillery that the tequila was bottled at. So it's okay. A whole nother level of confusion.
Well, on an easier note, as the guy who really knows nothing about what he's drinking, walking down the Total Wine aisles looking for a single can.
How do you do that? Do you walk like, yeah?
I walk like a normal person.
Okay, I was just checking.
Not like an Egyptian.
Just with longer strides than you.
Not like an Egyptian.
No.
What about no, chicken?
I'll tell you. Sometimes the music in Total Wine could be walk like an Egyptian.
And so, do you?
No, I still don't. Anyways, Beer Brewery right here in Indiana has given me Little Baddie, which is a
little
West
what?
Little Baddie,
B-A-D-D-I-E.
I can't honestly tell what it is. Something riding a motorcycle. Is it like hops with a helmet on riding?
You've learned a lot more about motorcycles recently.
I have.
Yeah.
West Coast style pale ale, and I don't know that I've had a West Coast style pale ale in the past, but I've had half of it already. It's tasty. I do enjoy it. And yours, also from the West?
Yeah. Champagne of beers.
They would disagree.
That's the water of the Rockies.
Yes. they asked me if I wanted some water, and I said, yeah.
Yeah. So I do often refer to that Coors Light as beer-flavored water.
I could have slung out any glass of tequila for you if you'd asked, though.
No, I will get there.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Well,
especially on the run number two.
Excellent. So you had mentioned pre-show the gigantic hat that I'm wearing once again. It really does shadow my face. I'm kind of noticing that.
Does,
but anyway.
Yeah. Makes the giant noggin you have covered by a giant noggin cover.
The noggin boss. That's what this is from.
Oh,
so
there you go.
Anyways, do you know Jeremy Stout, by the way?
I do know Jeremy Stout.
Jeremy has a couple of these.
I know he does.
And I'm 100% sure it's because I bought this.
I'm good buddies with Jeremy.
Yeah, I love Jeremy.
He's a copycat.
Jeremy's great. He's got a few of these, but he bought his because I bought mine. So he's got a couple with the different logos on. He's awesome. He's truly one of the funniest dudes I know. Hello, Jeremy.
Professional comedian, if I'm not.
Yes, in the past. Well, I guess still, but he literally used to do that on stage. Anyway, with the big giant Noggin Boss hat, people now knowing that we're running the marathon.
Yes, we are.
Have asked me the question, which is,
will you run with the hat on?
Correct. I get that all the time. And the answer is, God, no.
It won't fit inside of his dinosaur suit.
There, you know what? I had even considered, oh my gosh, that'd be hilarious. I do love the T-Rex suits.
If you put
running in the T-Rex suits.
Listen, you know the first thing I'd do if you put the T-Rex thing on to run?
You're going the other way?
No, I'd be right next to you. spraying the fart smell spray in that thing, just because those are just as funny.
That is one of the funniest videos I've ever seen.
Yeah, when somebody backs up to it.
That is hilarious.
And they can't get out.
No.
So,
and the little arms just go.
So going to Florida for the Disney Marathon, which will be ran in January, and the race starts at 5 in the morning, where it will not be warm.
And we will potentially live stream the entire run on Brian's...
No, that will not happen.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, so people have asked, will you wear the hat while you run? No. This week, even though it was warmer here in Indiana, I was out shooting some video at my newest listing, and for a couple of hours, I'm wearing this hat, walking around. I'm not even running, and I'm sweating in this hat. And I distinctly remember saying to myself, dude, there's no way you are running that marathon with a hat on.
You have to, though. We have to have a start point with the hat on so we get some photos.
I'm not sure my wife's going to be up early enough to, like,
your wife is going to come to the start.
Well, she's coming to Florida. I don't know if she's
going to come to the start. It's so important to be there to cheer your man on.
All right. Well,
and then, she's got to cheer him on at the finish, not at the beginning.
No,
well, maybe.
No. There's a
disappear for a couple hours. She's Tony go out to breakfast.
There's start. There's 5 mile. There's 15 mile. There's 20 mile, and then there's the finish. We have.
She may just have to greet me at the medical tent.
Can you rub some lotion on here?
Like I said earlier, if you ever see me running, you better be running too.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think you should try it, right? So have you ever ran before?
Not unless I had to.
All right. So
me neither.
This is how it all started. So let me ask you a question. If we had to run and I gave you $1,000 to run a marathon with us, would you do it?
No, I'd probably just stroke a check for $1,000 and tap out.
Someone told me I ought to just do that.
Yeah, but we didn't because it's going to be awesome.
Correct. Be awesome. I'm looking forward literally to running through Disney World, so there's that.
Not $1,000, but we would love for you to be able to stroke that check and help out the food pantry that we actually raised money for. We raised $1,300.
We did.
And then I'm going to put another $1,000 on the pot, so we're going to have $2,300 to a food pantry that Brian's wife works out on the South Side, helping people on the South Side. So we would love for you to jump in that if you want to.
Count me in for $1,000.
Oh, yeah, baby. That's
phenomenal.
Thanks, JC.
That's fantastic.
Real humanitarian.
It is amazing to do things and be able to reach out and help other people when you do this. And I like to do that. I do several fundraisers through the year. And this is kind of a fun thing for us. And we get to be helping.
I'm not so sure it's going to be fun. But we're going to do it.
I don't know.
By the way, I feel some people have told me that running this marathon, you need to make sure you go on the rides. Because apparently some of
the rides
are open at Disney World for the marathon runners.
So like you just stop at mile 15 and hop on the roller coaster?
If I stop at mile whatever, I'm done. You can't get started again.
I think that's a phenomenal idea. Just hop on. Because I'm sure the lines are short. It's just the marathon runners. No lines.
I did find out that part of our run goes through the Mexico section of Epcot.
Ooh, well.
And all of the water stations are tequila.
That's false.
But if you're going to go to Epcot, you got to do around the world.
I'd stop in Mexico.
You guys know about around the world.
Yeah, I've drank all the way around the world. Yeah.
Two times.
Next time I'm just staying in Mexico.
We've already, my wife and I have already talked about that, doing it again. It is so expensive.
It is so fun.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Most expensive day ever.
No doubt. But
guys have t-shirts. They have family t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy will have most expensive day ever.
Yeah.
Right?
Those are also sometimes the best days
ever. Well, it was a good time that both times I've done it. I may have told this on the story, on show before, but first time we ever did it, my wife and I went there with the intention. We're drinking around the world. And my parents, who live like 40 minutes away from there, were our drivers for the day. So we started over in Canada. So we get to Canada, get a drink. We go over to the UK, get a drink. Then we talk about going over to France and getting another drink. And my mom was like, are you drinking in every country? It's like, Mom,
around the world.
It's called drinking around the world. Yes, that's exactly what we're doing.
Sadly, there's probably people out there that don't know what around the world is in Epcot.
Yeah, there are 11 stationed countries, and now at various times they throw in little kiosks for other smaller countries. I'm like, do those count?
Here's what my problem was, is I started in Mexico.
Uh-huh.
I drank tequila.
Uh-huh.
And then I went to the one that was next to it. And I asked them if they had some form of tequila. And then at the next one I got to, I asked for another form of tequila.
One time I attempted to do that. Once I hit the warm sake in Japan. Yeah.
Back to tequila.
I was like, that was awful. I don't know that I can do that again.
Yeah.
I think actually one of my favorite things, and this goes back to high school, is nothing more than a snow cone. But in the Japan pavilion, it's called a kakigori. At least that's how we pronounce it. There is an adult version of it where they pour sake over the top. So that was my drink at Japan. It's like, this is great.
Huh. That would be better than sake.
Did you have to drink it with chopsticks?
No, silly. That's good. No, this is a straw like a normal person.
Well, I know that you have a big heart for giving.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear the story of how you came up with this heart of giving and then what brought you into insurance.
Well, when I share about how we got to where we're at, I always go back to when I was 10 years old. When I was 10 years old, my father passed away. And I was an only child. It was just my mom and I. And he died without any life insurance. And that left my mom and I basically homeless. And not like live under a bridge or live in our car homeless.
Control people.
Right. Okay. But we were couch surfers in our community. And so we basically just lived in this family's house for a week. And then we go live with this person in band for 3 or 4 weeks that I was in marching band with. Oh. And then we go live with this family for a couple of weeks.
What'd you play?
I was an alto sax player. Oh,
carry on.
You just say tuba so bad.
Yeah. Do I look like a tuba?
No, but I love the tuba. It's boom, boom, boom.
Do that again for me, please. See, there are benefits to do.
The most famous thing about the most famous tuba noise ever in the history of tuba noises.
The loser on Price is Right. And we have gone down.
Carry on, JC.
So, being that my story was what it was, I just decided very early on that I wasn't going to be a victim. I was not going to play that victim card my whole life. I just decided that we live in the greatest country in the world. There are very few places in the world where you can elevate your social class. And I still am a firm believer that this is one of them. And I just decided to work my tail off. So I worked hard. I got a full ride scholarship to go to Ball State. And I ran and I never looked back.
Chirp, chirp.
Right? Chirp, chirp. That was not a thing when I was there. So, went to Ball State, and when I was 19 years old, a gentleman came into our class, our sales class, and said, "Hey, have you ever met an old, poor insurance guy?" Now, given where I had come from in my life, that sounded amazing.
Maybe you had never met any insurance guy.
I didn't care. I liked him. I liked his message, and I liked what he said. And that resonated with me for what I would later find out to be all of the wrong reasons. But that's the path I decided to go down because I loved people. I loved relationships. And I saw insurance as a great vehicle to be able to do that. And so went to work for that company right out of college and did that for 10 years. Did really well, made more money than a 23, 24-year-old something should make. And we had a really good run. And then 2008 happened.
It happened to all of us.
Right? You probably more so than me, but...
I was out. I sold my business in 06, so I was out.
Oh, good for you. Talk about timing.
Luck.
Yeah, right. But
I lost over 100 grand a year in income in a matter of 12 months. And all of a sudden, I had been stripped bare and laid naked, essentially, figuratively, before God. And I didn't like what I had turned into. I had become somebody who was obsessed with status and money and stuff, and look at me and how great I am, and look what I have right. done. And when I lost that kind of money, all of a sudden I didn't have any of that stuff around me anymore, and I just realized what I had become. You know, you often hear that get on your knees or God will put you there. Well, he cracked me at that moment and put me on my knees, and I didn't like what I had become, so I fought it for another couple of years, and then I got out of insurance altogether. I didn't want to do it anymore.
Hair model?
What's that?
You became a hair model?
Yes, I did. Well, between that and my Calvin Klein underwear career. So.
Sexy.
Right?
You too could have this luscious flock.
I work out just enough that you can tell I work out, but I still like cookies.
Yeah, okay. Right?
So.
And beer.
And beer, yes. I do like
tacos. I bet you like tacos too. I bet you can eat some tacos.
You're on to me.
Oh,
yep. You're on to me.
In fact, if I could get some tacos right now, I'd be happy.
Sure. So I left the insurance industry altogether in 2011 and tried my hand at a lot of different things. But in 2015, we decided, my wife and I decided we wanted to be closer to family. Both the jobs that we had moved to Lafayette for, neither of us were working anymore. And
well,
we just decided
in Lafayette.
We wanted to be.
Right. The Hoosier State.
Boiler up.
What happened to Chirp Chirp?
At least I adopted Purdue. I lived there. It was good for business.
All right. Well, I mean, you don't live there anymore. It's okay to give it a
exactly.
Carry on.
It's the Hoosier State.
You know, there's two jobs where you can be wrong every day of your life and keep your job. One is the weatherman.
Weatherman, yeah.
The second is IU's athletic director.
No, oh, that hurts.
That does, boom.
You have no rebuttal for that one.
I don't.
That's okay.
I truly do not.
That's okay.
He's still cashing his checks.
Hell of a gig if you get it right.
Right?
Yeah. So anyway, back to I just decided to get out of insurance altogether. We moved down here to the south side of Indianapolis. That's where my wife grew up. She graduated from Center Grove.
God's country.
We wanted to be close. We wanted to be close to family and be in good schools. And so we saw that as just a lot more opportunities. So when we moved down here, I went and got a job at Sunbelt Rentals, doing construction rental equipment. Mm-hmm. Good company, made good money. It wasn't my environment. It wasn't my vibe. And so I did that for a couple of years. And then a friend of mine came to me and said, hey, we're opening an office furniture company and we need a sales guy. I'm like,
let's go.
I don't know anything about furniture, but
I sit on it from now to now. Yeah.
I don't know anything about furniture, but I know people. If you want to teach me the furniture side, then we'll get after it. So, so I did that for about 10 months. But what happened is I didn't like the person I went to work for.
Hmm.
And he would say things like, if you don't know the answer, make it up and hope it's true.
Yeah. Tell him we're going out of business in 90
someone's
days.
Business model?
Or he would say things like, hey, call these people and tell them there's a price increase coming. And I would say, but there's not. He says, they don't know that.
Wow.
And then the third straw that broke the camel's back, I've always been heavily involved in my kids' stuff. I've coached them at every level and everything, been involved in every organization they've been a part of. And at the time I was coaching basketball. Shocking, I know, 5'8" guy. Not my best sport.
It's okay.
Not my best sport.
What was the dude?
Muggsy Bogues.
Muggsy Bogues, yeah.
He was athletic.
Oh,
okay. Well,
you were just short.
You got the height.
I'm just short. That's the only thing him and I have in common.
Okay.
So, but I'd have to leave the north side at 4:30 to get down to the south side by 6 o'clock to get him to practice. And he came to me and said, hey, you're spending too much time with your family. I think you need to spend a little bit more time at the office. And I said, that's it.
Yeah.
Strike three, I'm done.
Not quite.
And at that point, I was kind of at a low point because I can't keep moving my flag deal to deal to deal.
Yeah.
I had to plant my flag somewhere. And so I told my wife, I said, I don't know what we're going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do, but it's not this. And we were at church one day and, you know, if you ever want to make God laugh, tell him your plans.
Yeah.
And so my wife, the whole time, she's like, you should look at going back into insurance. I said, no way. I don't want anything to do with that. You know,
people don't.
I didn't like who it had turned me into
the
first time. But we were at church one day. We heard a sermon from our pastor just talking about using the gifts and abilities.
We need to shout out
that we were given.
Pastor and church.
Pastor Chris Fellback, recently retired at Mount Pleasant Christian Church. But he was giving a sermon about using our talents and abilities. And, it just hit me. I knew exactly what I was going to do. I was going to go back into insurance, but I was going to do insurance for a different reason. Mm-hmm. I was going to put guardrails up on myself because I know what I'm susceptible to. And I said, you know what? We're going to use insurance as a vehicle to make an impact in and around our community. So what we do at Catalyst is we literally take a portion of every dollar we've been entrusted with and turn around and reinvest that back into the community to primarily work with two types of organization. Organizations that are going to help feed, clothe, and educate, or support our military veterans and first responders. That's what I'm passionate about. And so to date, being about 5.5 years in, we've given back over $60,000.
Man, that's awesome.
That wasn't easy when you start a business from scratch, because I can think of 1,000 things I could use that for.
Yeah.
Yeah, to not lose $60,000 in your first five years of business is amazing.
And the reason it was so impactful for me is, know thyself and to thine own self be true. It's a book by James Allen. But I know what I'm susceptible to. And by making that the priority of our organization, it keeps the guardrails on me from going off the rails and being all about myself.
Sure.
Right. So it gave me purpose. It gave me mission. It gave me something to recruit other people to come work for us too. It gave me a story to sell other than here's a cheaper, better policy, right? That only gets you so far.
Sure.
So that's kind of where we're at. We been at this 5.5 years now, and you know, insurance is not a pleasurable topic for most people.
Yeah.
Especially right now. And so
we're gonna get into that.
I used to jokingly say that insurance sucks, and I just make it suck less. It's still not going to be a pleasurable experience because we're charging you money for something we both hope you never use. Because
yeah.
if you do need to use it, something bad happened.
Yeah,
right.
And if you use it, we're going to charge you more next year.
Mm-hmm. And try to get out of paying the bill that you got to pay anyway.
Well, if you do it right, no, but yes.
That's the feeling on the other side.
100%. Like, yeah. It's just not, like I said, it's not a pleasurable experience for people. Right. They don't understand it. They don't know what they bought. They typically are, they've been educated or convinced to buy it on price.
Yeah.
When they have to use it, they hope they have good coverage. Very seldomly in the business world do those two go hand in hand, right?
Yeah.
Value and price. So we just try to make it easier so people understand it.
I encourage everybody to talk to an agent. Don't go to an online system where you fill out sure. your own stuff, because you could fill it out wrong and then end up having something happen and lose a lot of money because you didn't know.
I have to have a license, right? Just like you guys do. You
yep.
both have
You have to have license. A license?
I do, yes.
To drive your car?
Right.
And to be a realtor.
Do you ever get a speeding ticket for being a realtor?
No.
I was just checking.
I have gotten a speeding violation
while being a realtor?
Going on a realtor visit.
You guys battle the same things we do in the insurance business. You have, you know, there's online vendors and mortgages.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go to Rocket. I didn't say their name out loud, but
there's big websites deal. You can go look at houses on, right?
Absolutely.
You do a FSBO.
Yep.
Right? And, but there's value in having an expert in your corner.
Definitely.
I use that example all the time. People will call me and go, I'm thinking about selling my house by myself. Really? Why? Well, I bought it. All right. Yeah. I watched Law and Order. If you ever got arrested, are you going to represent yourself?
Right.
No. And, I know you got TurboTax, but you realize the tax code is 4,900 pages. So you're going to hire an accountant, or are you just going to do it yourself?
Right. Well, you know, there's companies out there that advertise only buy insurance for what you need.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Hell, I don't know what I need. You tell me what I need.
You need it until it happens.
Right. And when you find out it happens, you probably didn't have what you needed covered.
Well, if I could predict the future, I'd be out of a job.
Yeah. If I could predict the future, I'd have Elon Musk's jet.
Right?
And I'd probably go to the moon.
How often do you get calls from people asking about insurance, but it's too late because they didn't already have it?
It's been a lot more frequently here recently. The last year and a half, 2 years, and probably for about the next year and a half, 2 years, is some of the most turbulent insurance markets on the personal line side that we have seen in 50 years.
Yeah.
I'm not 50 years old, but that's what people tell me. And it has to do because insurance is a reactionary product.
Yeah.
People don't understand this, is that they price a product at the beginning of the year and they have no idea what that product's going to cost them.
Right.
No idea. For 5 to 7 years, because we don't know what claims you're going to have and we don't know what those claims are going to cost. Now, there's statistical modeling.
Those actuaries are pretty good, though.
They are, but they couldn't anticipate 30% inflation in building material costs year over year over year.
No.
Or body shop costs to fix vehicles, or nuclear verdicts on lawsuits, or the massive explosion of roofing plans, which we've talked about. And
right.
We're probably going to get into.
Yeah, we are.
But they can't predict that stuff. And so they think they know what it's going to cost. And at the end of the year, they said, oh, shit, it cost us a lot more than that. Guess what? We got to raise rates.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, the thing about insurance is it's regulated at the state level, and every state regulates their own insurance. A lot of people don't realize that.
Oh,
you know, you see everything that happened in California, and they're like, well, state, you know, this company canceled all those policies. It's because the state wouldn't let them raise rates to the level that they needed to raise them to.
Right.
And your business person, if you know every product you sell you're going to lose money on, you're out.
Yeah, we call that Florida homeowner's insurance.
That's a whole different podcast in and of itself.
Yes, it is. Not to mention the condo side of.
But the thing with insurance is you don't know what it's going to cost until after the fact.
Yeah.
Right. So then, you know, we've already charged you this, and we realize, hey, we didn't charge you enough for the claims that we had. So now we got to charge you more next year. Mm-hmm. And so that has created a lot of turbulence in the marketplace.
Three industries are good at that, though. The banking industry,
mm-hmm.
the insurance agency,
mm-hmm.
and casinos. They all have the biggest buildings.
Oh, we're professional bookies.
Yeah, we all know.
That's what we are. I mean, we're gambling.
Even if you think about it, it's like, I'm going to buy this insurance policy and I'm going to die by the time I'm 70. And you're like, nope, you're going to die at 74.
So my actuary says.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So before I met you, I had not heard of Catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
Is Catalyst part of a larger group or is it just you?
Well, part of my refinement process that I went through that I've already shared with you is I had a really big ego.
Hmm.
And a lot of times people will come to me and say, oh, is Catalyst, that's a franchise, right?
I bet you get that a lot.
And the ego side of me gets a little bit of excited, but I have really done everything I could to shed my ego to the best of my abilities. And we're actually a locally owned company. We have three employees. We started from scratch 5.5 years ago. And we have a very unique process in how we do insurance. And it's my baby, my brainchild. And insurance is a very common product that everybody has to have. And like I said earlier, insurance sucks. We just try to make it suck less.
Okay. You personally live on the south side of Indy.
Yes.
And you have three employees or you're one of the
three? I'm one of the three.
Okay.
There's a total of three.
So a three-person biz. I assume you are licensed for the state of Indiana.
Yes.
Do you have
insurance anywhere in the state of Indiana.
Okay.
We have referral partners all over the place.
Okay.
That, you know, we have everything from, we have stuff in Lafayette and Fort Wayne and South Bend and Evansville. And
well, you do South Bend?
Anywhere. I try not to, being a
okay,
fan.
There you go.
Well, it's funny. When I was a child, I lived in South Florida, and it was the Catholics versus the convicts.
Yeah, it was.
Hurricanes versus
absolutely.
Notre Dame, right? And so I have a double hatred for Notre Dame.
Oh, wow.
You know, you never want to pray during a Notre Dame football game, though.
Because?
Because Jesus is answering all those Notre Dame football player fans' prayers. He's not hearing
He's
yours.
Busy.
He's busy. I mean, touchdown Jesus. Where's he at? Is he at Ohio State? No.
No.
Yeah.
Apparently they didn't.
He was the last game.
Yeah.
Apparently they did.
Or maybe they didn't even need the prayers. I don't know.
Are we breaking for mid-game shots?
We should. Mid-game shots, yeah.
All right. We'll be right back.
We'll be back, yeah.
I'm Brian, your Indianapolis realtor. If you are looking to buy or sell a house in the Indy area, I'm your guy. If you're coming from out of state, want to make a move to the Indy area, I'm your guy. Check out the show notes for a link. We can get in touch and get you started. Thanks for watching. Now back to the show.
All right, so we're back, right? The magic of editing.
That's correct. You keep saying magic of editing. It's really just a jump cut, but that's
magic.
Sure.
Magic. People don't know.
They don't
know
that fancy terminology, jump cut.
That is correct.
I don't know how long now, and I didn't know that.
Well, you're welcome. Well, as it turns out, we now have some tequila.
We do a great product, Lost Lore, owned by Arturo Lamas. We've talked about Arturo before.
He's a great
guy. Sergio Cruz tequila, again, Nom 1414. And here's what's special about this Reposado. So a Reposado is a product that's been aged in some type of barrel for 2 to 12 months. This one is aged in Fundamental Observation Imperial Vanilla Stout Barrels from Bottle Logic Brewing.
In the words of Mitch Hedberg, I should have just said, yeah.
Dude, I love Mitch Hedberg. Do you like Mitch Hedberg?
I don't know that I'm
tomorrow
now, but
just so you know, tomorrow you're going to get 30 Mitch Hedberg jokes because they're the best. So what they did is they took this tequila in and they literally aged it in beer barrels, stout barrels.
Okay. Now,
tell me in the finish, you don't taste beer.
Do you really want me to say those words?
You don't, because you don't want to taste it. You don't know what beer tastes like anyway.
Oh, my God.
You get like a beer finish, like a stout finish in the end of that?
I don't drink stout beer, so I certainly don't know.
Let me try it again.
Try it again. take a little breath in after you swallow.
That's what she did.
That's what she did.
Yes. Oh, Lordy.
Well, we just lost all the female viewers of this.
We're not sure we have many anyway.
Yes.
You get a little beer hint. Just a hint of beer on top of that tequila.
Just a hint.
But a fruity tequila.
Definitely very different than the other one we were having.
Oh, completely different. Yeah, this is a great tequila. It's one of my favorite repos, and this is bottle number 573.
Okay.
And once these are gone, they're gone. You can't get it again.
I'm making my father proud somewhere up in heaven because he was a huge tequila guy. I love tequila, but he didn't care about the quality.
I say, you said he passed away when you were 10. So yeah, back in the day,
in the 80s,
there would not have been nearly as much knowledge about tequila available.
All of the tequila was good. All of the tequila was being made with a Tejona or a roller mill or being smashed by a mallet. It was all being cooked and
done properly. He just had the one with the worm.
That was usually a mezcal.
He would have the worm in it.
Yeah, there you go. Well, the wormy, I never had worms, but I was told it's a great way to lose weight. Like getting a parasite was a fantastic way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got a name for our next business. I've got worms.
Mm.
Maybe somebody's already done that.
I don't know.
Something about that sounds familiar. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Got worms.
Thank you. That is really, yeah.
I love Dumb and Dumber.
That's the second reference today I've had to Dumb and Dumber.
Do you want to hear the most
annoying? I think they call that a clue.
Do you want to hear the most annoying sound ever?
No. No, I do not.
That was a great part.
Phenomenal movie. Anyway, so JC, you are a Southside guy. You are a Center Grove guy. And you know that I have a bit of a presence in the Center Grove community. Former teacher there, and of course
the new voice of Center Grove.
And at this point, it's not new, but I am what my friend Joe, hi Joe, who doesn't watch the show, he terms the golden voice,
the elderly voice,
which I appreciate.
Center Grove High School.
Anyways, being the PA announcer for Center Grove, I appreciate how you give back to your community.
Well, I appreciate that. It's first of all, I mean, nobody says shoulder dog better than this guy.
I want to hear it. I don't go to the games.
Shoulder dog.
And that's a guy.
Oh, yes. That's
his last name.
I'll let you finish and then I'll come back to that.
Nah, there's a lot of different ways to market your brand. And for me, and the way that fits what I'm passionate about, I would much rather just be a presence in the community. You know, the old days of when people could tie their marketing dollars to a specific ROI, meaning I bought a phone book ad and I got 38 leads from the phone book this year.
Yeah, hard to do.
Or I did a billboard and I got 72 leads from this. That's kind of dead, in my opinion, as far as marketing goes.
Yep.
Marketing today isn't about specific ROIs. It's more about a recipe, right? And, you know, people call our office. One of the first questions we always ask is, how'd you hear about us?
Sure.
What do you think they say 99% of the time?
Brian Quinlan said your name at the Center Grove basketball game.
Google.
Google. Oh, Google. There you go.
That's the answer we get 99% of the time. Hmm. But in reality, they were looking for insurance. They put in insurance Greenwood or Central Indiana, and they're looking through a list of names, and they're like, no, no, no. Oh, I've seen that guy at the Little League fields. Right. I've seen that guy in the Center Grove football program. I've seen that guy's truck driving around town. I saw him at Wine at the Line. I saw him at wherever it might be.
I seen him on the Real Estate Makes Us Drink podcast.
Exactly.
Right.
No. Right. But
all the time.
That's where we spend our marketing dollars, is giving back to the community. So when we do an event like Wine at the Line or supporting the Center Grove tailgate.
Yeah.
For football games, it's not about getting leads. I think so. Side note for any young people watching this, don't network to get leads.
Mm.
Yep, network to make friends.
Yep.
Okay. Friends, connect with them on a personal level in a vulnerable way so that you can share your story and they can share theirs with you, and make a connection that supersedes business. Create a fan, create somebody who's going to be your cheerleader and wants to write a story in your book. That is where you will get leads from.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Good advice.
But I just want to be a presence in the community. Mm-hmm. I want people to say, man, I see you everywhere.
I think this was an insurance episode, but this is a success happy hour show.
It's really both.
Really?
I had no idea JC was just going to be just spitting out knowledge after knowledge.
I think we added a third host to the show from
now. Well, there we go. So my favorite all-time name to announce, I get to announce again. Do you ever come to basketball games?
Yeah.
Okay. Braden Goodpaster is a junior on the basketball team. I was Braden's sixth grade math teacher.
I want to hear how you do.
And when I first started teaching in Center Grove in 2000, my friend Bernie Doyle was the PE teacher where I taught, also the assistant baseball coach. And he had found out about my broadcasting background. He's like, dude, you should come and be the PA announcer for the baseball team. I was like, okay, what the hell? Let's go. So for 4 years, I was the PA voice for Center Grove Baseball. And Matt Goodpaster was a player on the team, second baseman.
He was also a pastor.
Okay.
A pretty good one.
Okay.
Was he a good pastor?
Sounds like it. So Matt Goodpaster,
good his name was
for,
a pastor.
I don't know if I got 1 year of him or 2 years of him. Good second baseman. But I got to announce Goodpaster. And then I had his oldest son as a sixth grader. I was like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. And now he starts for the Center Grove basketball team, and I get to announce him every
How
game.
How do you announce his name?
Great.
How do you announce his name?
Braden Goodpaster.
That's awesome.
It's awesome.
Opposed to a bad one?
Hey, yeah. That's right. That's right. So
yeah, I'm going to think Braden, his name wasn't bad, Pastor.
I'm going to need Braden to step up senior year so I can announce his name even more, but it's good times. So
I think you need to work on the Braden part.
No, it's all about the good pastor, Dave. That's good stuff. Okay, so one of the reasons that I offered you as a guest on our show today was you had spoken at a recent Southside MyBoard meeting and talked about how insurance here in 2025 is evolving.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you specifically spoke to was roofing.
Yes.
And that is a very big thing. As a realtor, that's something that I always have to be concerned about when I kind of gauge the condition of a roof.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'll just say, how is insurance changing now and maybe overall, but also roofing?
Okay. You can't ask me a topic like that without me getting on my soapbox.
That's okay.
So
you got the taller chair than I do.
I'm going to get into this. And you got to understand, insurance companies are not in the business of losing money.
No way.
Big buildings. We said that earlier.
Yes, correct. And so for the last 4 years, they've lost a lot of money.
Oh, wow. Okay.
A lot of money. A lot of it's inflation driven. Again, like I talked about earlier, they're very reactionary. They're not proactive. They're reactionary. So things cost a lot more than they thought they were going to. We're in the business of putting stuff back together. And if you look at the materials that we use to put stuff back together, it's skyrocketed.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but the other thing is, if you were to do a poll of people who got a new roof in the last 10 years, I don't know what the statistic is, but I bet it is alarmingly high how many of them used insurance to get one.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. That was never what that provision in an insurance policy was intended for. It's not a maintenance policy.
Right.
Okay. A roof is something that depreciates each and every year. They have a lifespan. Now, when it ended up happening, now, I'm not going to defend the insurance companies on this. They made their bed, and right now they're sleeping in it. Okay. But it's changing. They've finally woken up and realized what they've done. It's like anything in our society. When you set aside a pool of money for a specific thing and other people can start utilizing that pool of money for other things, it has to go away. It's not sustainable. And that's what's happened with roofing.
Mm.
Okay? It was there for massive major windstorms and softball-sized hail that absolutely decimates your roof. Not cosmetic damage. Now, I'm assuming there's going to be a roofer that's going to wash this, that's going to go off and, well, it knocked off some granules and that's going to lead to a I'm not going to argue that.
It kind of sounds like Doge is helping out in the roofing world.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I'm not going to argue that because they're going to say that it causes the roof to age prematurely and wear out sooner and all of that stuff.
So I can put on a new roof.
Correct.
Now, I'll say, you're going to continue here momentarily. As an agent in the past, anyways, I would go to a house. We would see that the roof is clearly older. So the recommendation would be if the inspector comes in and says, the roof is beyond its lifespan or such and such need to be fixed, suggestion would be go to the listing agent to have the seller have file a claim with their insurance for potential hail damage or, you know, whatever that could be remedied by the insurance company to ultimately pay for a new roof. They pay their deductible. Insurance company takes care of the rest. Everybody's happy.
I've got so many avenues that I want to go
on. Except for the insurance company.
Well, except for the insurance company. Right. So how is that different?
For anybody out there that hasn't filed a claim and is upset about their rates going up 70% over the last 3 years,
call these guys.
You can thank him.
There you go.
His name is Brian, I'm just kidding.
It's B-R-A-D. And on.
Wait, I'm a mortgage guy. I'm not a realtor.
In reality, though, that is a cultural thing. That is a reality.
Yeah.
Okay.
It became the norm, essentially.
Now, so I'm going to go on a little history lesson here. Back in the 80s, health insurance used to be deductible. Once you met your deductible, then there was co-insurance. Once you met your out-of-pocket, it was covered 100%. There were no office visit copays. There were no drug card copays. It was very, very simple. And you know what? Medical insurance was under control at that point in time.
100% true.
Right? Then the insurance companies and the doctors jumped in bed together, had a few too many tequilas, and came up with the idea that what if we put this office visit copay in place where it only costs somebody $10 to go to the doctor, and then we're going to be able to find all of these problems sooner, and we're going to prevent massive major medical. And everybody's like, yeah, that's a great idea.
It must have been bad tequila.
Right? And then what happened was utilization jumped 80%. And the insurance companies, being reactionary, said, oh, shit. We did not price for that. We didn't expect that. So utilization jumped 80%. And they said, okay, well, we don't need 3% inflation next year. We need 10%. So the population stomached it for a couple of years. Then all of a sudden, the 19-year-old single guy that's working at the factory, who the employer's trying to figure out a way to come to terms with cost of that 10% increase, says, Brian, I'm going to need you to take on a little bit more of this expense next year. And you're like, man, forget this.
I don't need insurance.
I haven't gone to the doctor in years. Why do I want to pay insurance? So he opted out of the system. Yep. Okay. So he chose to self-insure. The insurance industry still has the same amount of claims. Now they just have fewer dollars to pay for it. So what do they have to do next year? They got to raise rates more.
Yeah.
So now more people drop out, right? And the whole premise of that, the reason I bring that up is because people have been severed from the cost of insurance and of the claim, rather. They know the cost of insurance. They've been severed from the cost of the claim. Most people traditionally up until this point carried a $1,000 deductible. You mean to tell me I can get a $30,000 roof for a $1,000 deductible and if my roofer's willing to commit insurance fraud and cover that deductible for me, which is illegal, if you're listening to this, that is illegal. That is insurance fraud. It's not going to cost me anything. Well, hell yeah. Go ahead and put a new one on, right?
Who's committing the insurance fraud there?
Both parties, the homeowner and the roofer.
Okay.
And if, you can look up and the insurance guy talks through it, the insurance guy is too.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. That is insurance fraud. If anybody offers to pay your deductible who is benefiting from the service,
yeah,
that is insurance fraud. You cannot profit from a loss. And by having somebody pay your deductible, you are technically profiting contractually from a loss. Okay. So that is insurance fraud.
Bad things, man.
I had a really good friend of mine come to my office. He had just gotten a new job with a new restoration company. He's all excited, and the first thing they told him to do is go call on all the insurance agents you know. So him and I are really good friends. I really want him to come work for me. He's going to watch this podcast, Tyler. You already know that. Came into my office and said, yeah, we got this new company. Our owners are really excited. They're even willing to pay for people's deductibles. Isn't that awesome? I said, I'm sorry, say that again.
Excuse me?
He goes, yeah. They're willing to pay for people's deductibles. I said, that's fraud. He goes, what do you mean that's fraud? I said, hold on a second. Here's the statute. You can read it for yourself. That is insurance fraud.
So, wow.
Anyways, back to my original point. We have severed the consumer from the cost. Okay. A lot of people and society as a whole is shifting. There was a time when people were embarrassed to file an insurance claim. That was embarrassing.
Now they're excited to file.
100%. You owe me.
right?
I pay $2,000.
We have an entitled society.
I paid $2,000 a year for this insurance policy for 10 years. That's $20,000 I paid. I want my 20 grand back. That's cool, bro. Can I bill you when your house gets blown away by a tornado or gets burned down to the ground?
No.
Or if your 16-year-old son flips over the golf cart and gives the kid next door a traumatic brain injury that we have to pay for the rest of their life? Can we bill you for that? Right? Insurance is so much more than just your roof. You got me fired up, guys.
That's okay.
I've had just enough beer, just enough tequila. You got me up on my soapbox.
So true, though.
So why you're here. It's okay.
Insurance companies, what are they doing about it? Okay, insurance companies have done a lot of things right now, and you're going to start to see these. What they're doing first, the easiest one is mandatory minimum deductibles. I have one carrier specifically. I'm not going to name them, but if your home is under $1 million, your minimum wind and hail deductible is $5,000. If you're over $1 million, it's $15,000 on the cost of the house.
Wow.
Minimum $15,000 wind and hail deductible. Other carriers are going to a roof payment schedule where it'll be replacement cost for the first 10 years of the life of the roof. After that, it starts to decrease what they're willing to pay. A lot of carriers are doing actual cash value on roofs, okay, meaning a depreciated value. If you've ever had your roof placed by insurance, you get one check right away. You get the second check when they're done. Well, you're only going to get the first check with an actual cash value of roof, which is the depreciated value. And if you think about it, being that it depreciates over time, that's kind of why are we replacing 25-year-old roofs with brand new ones, right?
Is there any different value in a metal roof versus a shingled roof?
Yes, but the problem you run into with metal roofs is a lot of people will file claims for cosmetic damage. There's no functional damage. It just doesn't.
No one's going up there looking at my metal roof.
Right. Well, yes, they are.
No one's up there like, oh, damn, you got dents.
Well, just think about this for a second with your car insurance, right? And if a body shop guy's listening to this, he's going to be like, damn, that's a good idea. But if they started walking around the neighborhoods on Saturday mornings when everybody's outside doing their yard work and they got their car out of the garage, he's like, hey, you know what? I just fixed your neighbor's car, and he told me I could come over and look at yours. I was looking at your car. You got a couple door dings. I bet I can get somebody else to pay to repaint your whole car. What would your car insurance do? It would skyrocket. That is what is happening with home insurance right now.
So do you think that's like so many people that walk into an emergency room that don't have insurance in America, but we treat everybody that comes into an ER. We treat absolutely everybody. Nobody in America gets set outside on the sidewalk because they can't pay.
So
yet the insurance pays amounts to cover those people that don't get paid for, right? That don't pay themselves.
I was talking to the CEO of a major health company. This is we're making a right turn here. But he was talking
about a political turn is what we just made.
I don't remember the numbers, and I'm not going to try to quote them. I'm not going to be, you know, Abraham Lincoln that says 88% of the statistics on the internet are true, right? I'm
correct, yeah.
That guy. It's an astronomical number, but Indiana hasn't raised their Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement rates in a long time.
Like 12 years.
In overall. And we know what inflation has done. So each year, that cost to serve those Medicaid and Medicare patients is skyrocketing, but the reimbursement that they're getting is fixed.
Yeah.
So where's that getting made up?
Yeah, who's building the biggest buildings?
Insurance companies.
Hospitals. Have you drove downtown and seen the biggest building that's being built in the state of Indiana right now?
Correct. Well, you know, and so one of the big hot button issues is why is medical care so expensive in Indiana? If you talk to people that are in business development and trying to recruit businesses to come to Indiana, that is one of the negatives is our cost of health care. If you're a big employer, that's a big deal. And one of the reasons is because we are so underfunding our Medicaid and Medicare that it has to be made up with private insurance. There's a lot of other factors.
Do you know,
I am grossly oversimplified.
When you go into the hospital and they say, you know, do you have an insurance coverage? And you tell them this is the bill, the amount they charge. But if you say you're self-pay, do you know what that amount does?
It's a fraction.
An extreme fraction as self-pay.
There are healthcare companies, health insurance companies out there that I'm aware of that have built their entire claims model off of exactly what you said. In fact, when you sign up with them, they teach you to say you are a cash pay customer. And whenever you get that bill for the cash pay, you send it in and they will reimburse the cash pay to you. And then you pay the provider.
We actually have to pay up front in the insurance program that we are.
Yep.
But my wife's 100,000 plus bill was actually a couple hundred thousand plus bill was less than half. So now I had to pay it up front.
Right.
And then I was reimbursed.
So you have a large segment of the population paying under cost that's being made up by a large segment of the population paying over cost. What you're able to do is pay what it should be.
Yeah, it's amazing that they go, okay, well, this many people aren't going to pay.
Right.
And the insurance is going to pay for this many.
Right.
So that's what we're going to raise the cost to. And I always said, look, if the first 50% of the people came into Walmart and grabbed a gallon of milk and didn't have to pay for it, how much does the second 50% of people that come into Walmart have to pay for milk?
That's
exactly how it works. That $4 gallon of milk becomes a $12 gallon of milk because half the people got it for free.
If you understand the principles of insurance, and this goes across all types of insurance, the history of insurance goes back to ancient China.
Wow.
And villages in ancient China would grow a harvest. Each family would have their harvest. And when it came time to take it to the market, they would each put it on their boat and they would head off to the market. They would go down the river, very treacherous trip. And inevitably, every year, one family's boat would spill and
right.
they would lose their entire harvest for the year.
Right.
They'd come back. The village would have to support them for the entire year until their harvest was ready the following year. One of the wise Chinese people said, I had an idea. What if we take our crops and we'll split them up? If there's 10 of us going to the market, I'll put a tenth of my crop on your boat, a tenth on your boat, a tenth on your boat, and so on.
How do you think they said that in Chinese?
Nah, just don't. Let it go. Let it go.
We're going to Elsa that one.
Freeze it.
And let it go.
Let it go.
But, and so that way when the inevitable happened, which it did every year, somebody's boat flipped over.
Yeah. Sure.
Everybody lost a tenth of their crop. Nobody lost at all.
They're like, dang it. Brian's a bad boat driver. He does this right. every year.
Don't put your stuff on Brian's boat.
So if you understand that concept, we all pay a little, so none of us have to pay a lot.
Right.
That's the concept behind insurance, but it's been
flipped.
It's flipped. It's been perverted. It's to the point now where it's you owe me. And so insurance companies aren't stupid. They're not going to lose money forever, and that's why they're trying to reconnect people with the cost. Now, how does that impact you? I mean, real estate makes us drink, right? So how does that impact
more?
You as a realtor is that be prepared for the seller to have to bear a lot more of the cost. Now, also what's happening is insurance companies' tolerance for claims has shrunk dramatically too. And so a lot of people are like, well, if I file this claim, what's that going to do to my rates? By itself, nothing. But I don't know what else is in your future.
Sure.
You might file this small $2,500 claim. It's not a big deal. But then a tornado comes through or you have a house fire. Now you've had two claims in a year. You're canceled.
Yeah,
there's not a carrier out there that won't cancel you with two claims in a year.
Right.
Okay. And so by itself, it's not a big deal. But when you compound it with another claim that you may or may not have.
Yeah, right.
Right. Now you got a problem. And so I said at that event that minimum deductibles now on roof for wind and hail is $2,500 with most carriers. And in addition to that, if... your roof's 10 years old or older, you can expect a $5,000 deductible. If it's over 15 years, there's a lot of carriers that say thanks, but no thanks.
What if it's a metal roof?
Metal roof's different. Has a completely different, they don't tend to age, obviously,
like a shingle roof.
You're seeing a lot of cosmetic exclusions now in policies to not cover just because you got a couple dings in your roof.
Yeah, I don't care if you go up there and it looks like Dolly Parton all over the roof, as long as it's not leaking.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Yeah. Comparison right there.
My podcast, I'm going to keep the joke I had in my brain.
Was it similar?
I'm just going to let it go. We'll have to go with that one off the air.
Yeah, that's fine. So as far as, I don't know, advice to consumers in the real estate world.
Never file a claim.
Going forward as things are kind of evolving.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Be prepared to have to spend more out of pocket to replace that roof.
Okay.
Account for that in the sale. Take that out of your proceeds, right? Be willing to negotiate with the seller or with the buyer rather, saying, hey, this roof's 12 years old. It's in good shape. Statistically, it's got at least another 10 years on it. I'll split it with you. Be creative in that. for the roofers that are out there, if any of the roofers that know me, I've been beating this for 2 years. I've been beating this drum. Start moving away from your business model being 100% based on insurance claims.
Sure.
Right? Because the consumers, if you come to me and say it's $1,000 out of pocket for a $30,000 roof, most people can scrounge up $1,000 if it's an honest roofer to pay that deductible, mm-hmm. right? A lot of people are just waiving that deductible altogether. So that's easy. But now if we have $2,500 minimum deductibles or $5,000 deductibles or my $30,000 roof, I can only get actual cash value where they're only going to give me 18. I have to finance to 12. You're going to see a lot more people just not put on roofs right. or they're going to have to finance that out of pocket cost, right? We're fortunate. We're in Indiana. We're kind of the last great bastion of this. You go to Texas, some of those have 2 and 5% wind and hail deductibles, and that's of the limit of insurance. So if you live in a $500,000 home and you have a 5% wind and hail deductible, it's 5% of $500,000. You have a $25,000 deductible on your roof.
Mm. I have multiple clients in Florida that own their homes free and clear that do not have insurance.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because their insurance is $25,000 a year.
I'm going to address this for anybody that wonders what the hell's going on in Florida. People think it's all hurricanes. Hurricanes just provide the environment for this. It's 100% legal. See, the state of Florida accounts for 12% of all property and casualty claims in the United States. 12%. Higher than, you know, if we divided it up by 50, right? That's
California's your next highest.
Right. They account for 12% of all property and casualty claims. They account for 81% of all property and casualty claims that end up in court.
Yep.
Okay.
Wow.
That is why Florida's insurance market is a complete shit show.
It is.
It is nothing to do. They can actuarially price for the claims. What they can't do is the gross taking advantage of the insurance system for their gain.
And I have a good friend that lives in the Daytona area that his cost for insurance per year is what it would cost for him to replace his roof. And they have a roof exclusion in between.
He's like contents coverage.
Yeah. He's like, why? I don't even have insurance. He's like, right. I don't care.
Right.
Wow.
Now, going back to our conversation about medical insurance, right?
Yeah.
You've got the healthy money leaving the system, leaving the bad money in the system.
You do.
Fewer people to pay for it.
Doing systems like what we do with the shared programs.
Right. So now that's a perfect connection of those two concepts. Yeah. You have people that probably would never file a claim anyway, not paying into the system.
Right.
And the people that can't wait to file a claim
are in the system.
Correct.
It's the same. I'm going to go to my medical doctor because I have the flu. I'm not going to go to the ER because I don't have insurance.
Oh, 100%.
People don't understand how those costs end up costing us. And we do live in a country. People don't understand that we do live in a country where we treat every single person. It's not like Mexico where you go to the doctor and they're like, you ain't got nothing, no money, no chickens, no nothing. See you later, buddy.
You bring the tequila with you?
Go drink some tequila.
Actually, it's not true. Mexico has a socialized medicine program now that takes care of people. But when you look in America, it doesn't matter. They don't ask you if you can pay. They ask you if you have insurance. If you don't, you still get treated.
So at the end of the day, this is going to stabilize out. We're going to get rates adequate for what they're paying out. Consumers are going to be more connected with the cost of a claim. They're going to pay higher insurance premiums.
Or none. They'll make the decision not to pay any.
If you own your house free and clear. But as you know, being in mortgage and real estate, if you're financing a house, they got to have insurance.
But you know, there's so many more cash buyers. And you know, right now, if you look at the average amount of homes sold in America, the cash buyers are up in that 18, 19% level. And only 4 to 8% of those are investors. So right. You have so many more people that now have the ability to buy that house cash.
The equity is their own.
And some people don't even own, don't even have a mortgage.
There's been a movement where
you have insurance still, don't you?
The parent generation is willing to help the younger generation, their children, and help finance their house purchases. And basically, they're pre-funding their inheritance. Hey, I'm going to give this money to you up front. Go buy a house with it.
Yeah.
Just know when I die, you're not going to get as much or any.
I'm going to do a reverse mortgage on this.
Yeah.
Take out every damn dime, and then my kids ain't getting nothing when I die.
You ain't getting shit.
Yeah, we'll do a reverse mortgage and take it all out. Probably.
But
not.
I mean, these are just some of the things that people are doing, right? And there are a lot of cash buyers out there. That's a response to the mortgage rates being what they are.
Yeah.
You know, I don't love my house, but I like it a lot, and I'm gonna sit in my 2.6% mortgage. I'm sure a lot of people will.
Well, I don't have that, but I'm gonna
paid off house.
I'm gonna stay here forever. So
right.
All right. So I'm gonna ask you a different question.
Sure.
That I've asked at the end of these because this has been fun. You've had a few drinks and you enjoy drinking with us, and we did two full shows because I guess I forgot to hit record. It's my fault. So if you could sit down and have your favorite drink with any person, alive or dead, who would you sit down and have a drink with and want to ask questions, talk to, and share your life and share their life about? Who's that person who you would go, man, that would be amazing to sit down and have a tequila or a beer or whatever you both like?
You know, one of the people I always said I always wanted to meet, now you understand, when I was two, my parents sold everything they owned in Indiana and said, screw it, we're moving to Key Largo, Florida. And I went down to Key Largo, Florida, and they bought a little hotel that had a little restaurant down in Key Largo, Florida, and that was the deal. So I grew up in tiki bars listening to steel drums, watching sunsets. That's my...
And little Jimmy Buffett?
That's where I was going. God rest his soul. You know, we have to pour some out for Jimmy. I always said I wanted to sit down and have a true margarita with Jimmy Buffett.
Margarita and cheeseburger?
Yes, right, in paradise. I just the stories of his life, living that tropical world, right? I would love to sit down with him just because, you know, I'm like Moana, like the water calls me.
Yeah.
Like, you look just like her.
I know, right? I look more like Maui without.
Yeah, exactly. More like Maui.
But
I don't know who either of those people are, but I'm going to go with that.
Your kids are way too old then.
Like are their 30s. Yes.
That would be why. But no, I love the water, the beach life, you know, the salt life.
Chasing the salt life.
Right? It just, I grew up in that. And
favorite Jimmy Buffett song?
Ooh. Mango in Paris is a good one, obscure one that a lot of people don't know. Pirate Looks at 40.
Very cool.
Is an always a great motto. Made a lot of money, but I pissed it away so fast, right? I could go on and on.
Part of your JC, story. I got to say, thanks for your spirit. Thanks for who man. You are and what you do and really what your life is about. It's not about insurance. It's about people. And you've really,
again, that is
really
such
impressed
a
me.
Theme on our show.
It is, yeah.
Our businesses are all about people so often.
You know, what we do for a living is just the vehicle.
Yeah.
That's not who we
100%.
Are. It's just a vehicle that allows us to be who we are.
Yeah, I agree with you. But on the same note, I'm a mortgage guy. Like if you ask me what I do, I'm a mortgage guy. I love the mortgage business. I'm a mortgage guy. So it is definitely ingrained in my identity, if you will.
It's funny. I describe myself as a podcaster.
Well, that's good because eventually Brian and I will exceed our heroes. The Kelsey brothers. We will get that big Amazon. We're working on that big Amazon contract.
You know, we're at 107 followers. We might need
to be 7. We're 107 million short. We'll get there.
It's fine.
But I've always been into the identity of what I do for a living. Yet what I do for a living is so much deeper than just doing mortgages, much like what you do. And I appreciate that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's, I don't do it for my glory. I just feel, you know, someday my time on this earth is going to be done and I'm going to meet my creator and I just want to hear well done, my good and faithful servant.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just hope it's sooner or later than sooner for me.
I'm not in a hurry.
I dig it.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I love you. I love you, Lord. I can't wait to meet you, but
yeah,
I'm in a hurry.
I kind of dig it here. Yeah. I'd like to be really old.
I will say thanks for sharing your story. This was, you and I have been friends for a bit. Mm-hmm. But I learned a lot about you today that I did not know, and it's very inspiring. So thanks, man.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thanks for inviting him here, Brian.
You're
I
welcome.
Appreciate you. Let's cheers. Let me.
Oh my gosh, pour more.
I'm always the guy pouring more.
Every episode, we got an empty glass. All right. Well,
cheers.
Thanks for watching. Real Estate Makes Us Drink. We'll see you next time. Cheers.
Drink, Los Lord Tequila.